Hi, and welcome to another Applied Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Reeve. This time I sit down with Nancy Yakimoski to talk about how she uses applied learning in her arts courses. It's a great conversation. I hope you'll enjoy.
My name is Nancy Yakimoski. I teach in the visual arts department. I've been there for 20 years, happily been there for 20 years, and I teach art history, visual culture, creative photography, and a lens-based class, which is digital photography and video. And I don't know what else about
me. That's a great start. Okay, so what are your values of teaching and learning that inspire you to start integrating ideas that around applied learning?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the visual arts program, it is already an applied learning program. So students are when we're teaching such a lens-based class or a creative photography class, for example, I introduce the conceptual part of it, but there's also the technical part, like how do we actually load film into a film camera? How do we process the film? So our department has always been about like hands-on like learning, right? So so that's the way I kind of came up through my own education as an art historian, as well as an artist in a few different mediums. This is the way I sort of learned, and I can't imagine like somebody learning, like reading a book and then, you know, assuming they've got the knowledge to go out there and do it. So so I've always been in this sort of like hands-on learning.
Okay. Can you briefly describe or explain just an applied learning class or course that you want to talk about today?
Sure. So one thing that I helped spearhead was an event. We called it the Art Poem Art Experiment. And it came about, the initial idea came out in about in the fall of 2015, when one of my students and I, her name's Aileen Penner, went to an event at the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria. And at this event, Yvonne Blomer, who is the Victoria's Poet Laureate, had this event where she invited poets to respond to works of art in a particular exhibition. And so we went to this gala, and it was basically the artists reading a poem and us looking at the art piece. And Aileen and I looked at each other. It's like, we should do this at Camosun because we've got this amazing Camosun art collection that nobody really knows about. And this is what we should do. And so we batted around the idea in the fall. And then it sort of grew from there, and we brought in other people. Do you want me to go into lots of detail about it?
We'll get it. Okay. We'll unpack it as we go. But that gives us a general starting point.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to now delve into the eight ideas or principles of applied learning, and we'll sort of try to talk about them in light of the project, but just in general too, in terms of how it connects to you as an instructor and a teacher. So the first one is the idea of intention. How do you decide that an experience is the best way to learn a particular concept? Because you mentioned you start with a concept or theory or idea. Like, how do you connect that theory? What's your goal or your idea, your intention when you start?
Well, the idea behind the Art Poem Art Experiment was to involve students in a variety of ways. And with the art world, you know, it's great if you have a BFA, if you come out with your master, your MFA. But really, when you get out there, it's like they ask you, like, what kind of experience do you have? And I know I went to school with like amazing artists, but they focus on their art practice without actually getting out and figuring out how to do an exhibition or how to be a committee member or participate in the art community. They kind of had this insular practice. And it was to their detriment. Like, they didn't get contracts. They didn't get, like, they didn't actually get a job afterwards. And so, in my own sort of art practice and my sort of coming up in my career, that was really important. And I realized that that gives students the advantage. So anytime for, the visual arts students in this case, it was, okay, so we're going to have this event and we want people to help us install the work. So who wants that kind of experience? And so we asked people, who wants that experience? And this is stuff for your art CV, right? And then, so that's kind of the intention behind it, is giving students this real world experience that they can put on their resume, and that they could, if they've helped install art shows, they can go in and say, oh, I can volunteer, I can help, or they could be hired by a gallery to install. So, and that's kind of the end goal for much of what the Art Poem Art Experiment was about.
Okay, awesome. When you're planning an activity like this, what is like the long-term, like, are you trying to build a portfolio of skills? Like, what is your long-term goal in terms of your intention again, in terms of this is one project amongst many. Like, do you have a vision for the kind of skills, the real world skills they're going to build?
Well, because this project was like a one-off project that we Jay and I did off the side of our desk, it did give our students like hands-on experience that they could take forward within the program. We do have a course that is like the professional practices course, where this is where students learn all the nuts and bolts about being an artist outside of their art practice, like how to promote themselves, how to put together a portfolio, building their own website, how do you put together a package to submit to a curator. So this is sort of like the long-term plans that we sort of work towards. So our program is about giving students the hands-on skills that they need to they basically explore a variety of practice mediums.
Right.
And then we give them these extra skills that puts them on the path for a professional career.
Okay, so to do that, and we can talk in terms of the program and also in terms of the project, the Art Poem Art, there's a lot of preparation for you to set this up. I guess the first question is sort of, how do you know when you're ready to make it fly?
You never know when you're ready to make it fly. I think the best thing you can do is trust that your project is going to be successful. I think you just have to believe that it's going to be successful on some level, and that there's going to be hiccups, there's going to be detours, there's going to be like, oh my God, we should have thought of that, how come we didn't think of that? So I think the best thing you do is just, you have a great idea, you know it's going to benefit students in some way, and even the mistakes or the hiccups are a learning moment, right? So you never know when you're ready, but you jump in and you build a team, people that you trust, people that have experience that you need, and you work through it as a team. If you're thinking about doing a lone wolf thing, I think that's where you run into trouble, because you can't be an expert in everything. And I think when the idea of, and it's also my philosophy, it's like learning is not this monastic activity, right? We learn together, we collaborate, you know, your strengths and my strengths, or we help each other out. So you just kind of jump in and you ask for help when you need it, and you probably, you know, and don't be afraid to ask for help. Yeah, so
okay.
It's like fearless. You just have to be fearless and jump out of the nest.
Okay. And how, you know, you kind of talked on this a little bit, this particular, the Art Poem Art project began was you saw it, mm-hmm. or a version of it, with one of your students at an art gallery downtown, mm-hmm. and you're like, good idea.
Yeah, we should do this.
So there's a certain amount of, like, I want to say an homage.
Yes.
you know, to the stuff you saw in the world that said, hey, let's try that here.
Mm-hmm.
When you plan out like this activity, an applied learning activity, can you walk through the thought process when you consider like equipment, logistics,
right.
learning materials? Like, you know, you'll never think of everything. You've mentioned that.
Yeah.
But what's your kind of, what's your planning process as you start thinking, you saw this thing, you think, hey, that's great. I think our students would love it and really benefit from it. What's your thought process in terms of logistics?
With the Art Poem Art Experiment, it was a huge project and like three times the work that I thought it was going to be, because I thought, oh, I've got, you know, I could totally do this. So Aileen and I kind of sat down. It's like, let's do this. It's like, okay, how are we going to do this? And so we brainstorm. So I think the first step is to brainstorm. It's like, what do we want? How much effort is it going to take? How much money do we need? What's our timeline? You know, sort of like basic event planning.
Right.
Because it was basically this event.
Right.
And then it's like, okay, so one of the things that we needed money. We needed money for, because we had a publication. Right. We needed money for the reception. We invited an artist and poet to give a workshop, but we didn't want to charge for the workshop. So first of all, we had to find the money.
Yeah.
And then the idea with the money was that the money had to benefit students directly. So then it's like, oh, that's easy. We'll just get students involved, students that wanted to have experience curating an exhibition. There was a writing component, the poetry. So right. Jay had her students curate, like vet the poems. So what we did is we started out like a basic timeline. Where are we going to get the money? How are we going to get students involved? Who would be interested? And just sort of like broke it down according to a timeline. And we gave ourselves like basically from January, the beginning of January, when we first put out the call for poets and artists. And then our final gala poetry reading and art show was on March 31st. So it's a very short timeline, but we did find money to hire students to do the work. And if we couldn't, we hired, so Aileen was a student at the time, so we hired her to do all of the details and build the website. And then we gave out honorariums to students that helped because we couldn't pay them directly.
Right. Okay. Now, one of the other principles from preparation and planning is now authenticity. And you've already used it, and I've heard others to say that real-world activity. Mm-hmm. What is it about your student activity that ties it to some current and foundational elements or practices in your profession? And it seems pretty obvious in this case.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, part of being an artist is like to actually make the artwork. And I mean, that's kind of like on your own. But in order to get your work out there, you either need to hire somebody to represent you, like a gallery. And then they usually take, 60% of whatever they make. And I have not heard one artist that say, wow, I have a really great, representation and I haven't been swindled. So part of it is... I think we're obligated to teach our program, like the visual arts students, about the real world out there. Like once you leave the program and you're an artist and this is what you want to do in some way, shape or form, these are the ways to apply for a grant. These are the questions to ask people. This is when you have an art show, there are art fees to be paid to you and you need to make sure that they're being paid according to Carfax rates. We're basically telling them, like giving them the inside scoop, which is just as important as learning the skills to make their artwork.
Right.
So it's like how to function as an artist out there.
Right. Or so the this next is trade steps. Craft.
Yeah. I mean, and sometimes, I mean, our students go on to be, art therapists, teachers, like, I mean, it's a whole gamut, but the idea that there are things that they need to be aware of, besides, like, learning how to make art.
Right. Okay. A reflection is usually a key part in any process, whether it's student reflection or your own reflection. And we're going to ask a number of questions now about your process of reflection, both for yourself and for your students. And we may hit on these themes a little later on as well. So what reflective questions or practices do you have students consider once they've completed part or the whole of a particular applied learning process?
Mm-hmm. Within our program, we meet with our students at midterm as well as at the end of the semester. And they also come to talk about, about their progress or about their experience within that particular course. We also have an interview that the first years do at the end of their second semester before they go into second year. We also have an exit survey that our graduating students have. So we're always sort of getting them to reflect on the courses, the deliverables, the facilities. And so we have that sort of built in as part of our program. So there is that that reflection on what they're learning and how they're learning. And our students feel, because there's so much one-on-one with our students, if something's not working for them, they're in our office talking to us. So it's good because it's like there's a trust built in a program that is a really kind of a small one.
Right.
So am I hitting that question correctly?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm thinking what else. So within our program, there's already these systems built in. Within individual, like the courses that I teach, part of some of the assignments are, I get them to write artist statements about, you know, here's this project. They have to research it. They have to produce something. They get feedback on it. They get a chance to rework it before grading. And then oftentimes I'll get them to write an artist statement, which is just, that's what you need to learn how to write. Or sort of, if an artist statement isn't applicable, then I get them to do like a reflection on it. Like, what did you learn? What were the speed bumps? What were your eureka moments? And as a way to get them to think about, you know, just like a basic reflection. Because one of the things I think about being a student and our program, I mean, the students that take our program full time, I mean, they are here like 6-7 days a week, like 9 to 5, and come back at night. Like, it is hard. It's an intense program, and I think they don't have time for that reflection. So I try and build it in. It's like, okay, you know, you've done this. What worked? What didn't work? What are you going to take forward? So as putting into practice.
So how do you know? How do you pinpoint those times or breaks when students' reflection is really critical?
When I see them getting tired, actually, when I see that. They are usually by midterm, they've been going hard, and then and so it's a way to kind of ease up on the workload, but also to make sure that they're also, you know, kind of staying in the flow, because there's nothing worse than students that hit midterm and they kind of crash and they kind of like scoop back up and kind of come back to that level. So I usually do those sort of because it's more like, it's not a research assignment, it's just like, huh, like to sit down and kind of have a conversation with themselves.
Right.
And sometimes I'll get them to like have a conversation with their artwork. Like, so it's a kind of, you know, you sit down and you ask your artwork questions. Or, yeah, so it's just kind of it's a way to ease up on the research element of the hands-on and to get them to think critically in a different way, but also in a creative way.
Right, right. So, what about you? When and how do you reflect on an applied learning activity?
Oh, God. After every class, because I'm always trying something new. And I think that's what, like, when you teach for a while, you become confident in your skills, right? And so you can be more risky. You can kind of throw caution to the wind and just like, I don't know if this is going to work. And so you try it and it flies, or it flies, but it kind of falters. And so it's like, okay, so next year, and I always have in my notes, like, next year, you know, 1 hour on this, you know, take this out, try this approach. And so I'm always reflecting. But then, you know, the next crop of students comes and you try it and it fails because they are not interested in talking, or they're not. So it's always, it's a hit and miss thing. And I think that's kind of the joy of teaching, is that you're never standing on solid ground. It's kind of shifting sand, and you just do your best and you try and read the students. And I mean, the teaching also has to be engaging for the instructor. And so, you know, what excites me, like, I think it's cool when I see students, you know, sitting in front of their artwork for half an hour, asking it questions, and they're thinking, this is crap. What am I doing? This is stupid. And then, I don't know, I kind of like watching them struggle. I do. Cause I think it's, that's where you learn. It's like, okay, where's your place in this, and how are you going to make it work? Yeah. So here's the problem. What's your solution?
Okay. How does students' reflection impact an applied learning project. Mm. So I assume you're getting feedback from like the ARP Home ARP.
Yeah.
Did if you were to do it again, or how would students' reflection on it impact how you did it another time?
Well, the students that, because we went, like, the people we had, like, Jay was responsible for the poetry. Rick was responsible for, and two of our students, Rick was teaching in our department at that time. He was responsible for curating. I was responsible, I was doing the publication. And so I asked, you know, it was like, you know, ask the students you worked with, like, what was good about it. And then I also asked, you know, Jay and Aileen and Rick, and we had Mike. Mike is a technician in our department, and so he worked with a student to install the art show. It's like, what was, you know, what was good, what wasn't good, and so everybody gave feedback. The students, the people that were responsible for kind of mentoring and guiding them, and so I mean, so we kind of took that all in, but nobody said, oh, it was terrible. It was basically we ask students who are interested. So it wasn't like, okay, you have to do this. It's like, who wants this experience? And the people that stepped up were, you know, they stepped up and they were excited about it. It was like, oh, maybe we could have used like, you know, 2 days to install the art show instead of 1 day, or right. Like it's just those kind of logistics.
Right. Okay. So we're going to move on then. We're going to talk a little bit about orientation and training and engagement. Mm-hmm. How do you, and you've kind of touched on this a little bit, you talked about being an experienced instructor and sort of having the confidence to try things and recognizing, you know, some things work great with one class, but maybe not so well with another, or, you know, the magic, the alchemy of a great thing happens sort of, and you let it run.
Mm-hmm.
How do you prepare yourself to guide an experiential learning activity? Like, what about you when you're coming into that?
I start backwards. It's like, okay, what's the end goal, right? So we've got the learning outcomes for a particular course, and I'll talk about, yeah, the course is probably a good place to start. So, for example, right now I am teaching LENS class, which is Art 161, and we're at a point now where students are going to be learning how to use the DSLR camera in video mode. So they're going to have to do something called a durational photograph, which is basically a long exposure photograph that when you look at it, it looks like a photograph, but then something happens, you know, 13 seconds out of the 20 where like a blade of grass blows in the wind. It's like, oh, and suddenly you have to rethink. It's not a photograph, it's a video. And what's my position as a spectator? So in that kind of, because this is probably, you know, in 5 years, the durational photograph will not be a thing anymore, because it's like this, it's where technology is, which is kind of exciting, that we can use the same camera to take stills as well as video, because once upon a time, we would have a camera for this and a camera for that. So when I'm thinking about the durational photograph component, I'm thinking about, okay, so in the end, they have to produce one durational photograph. Okay, so what does that mean? Because nobody knows what it means. So then it's like, okay, what do they need? Well, they need to research it. Okay, so what kind of questions do I need to formulate, and links and artists do I need to supply them with in an assignment to help them understand that? And so then it's like, okay, and then the technical stuff, when do I introduce that? And so then it's sort of like, I just kind of work backwards. And then and I get students, I do a flipped classroom approach, because I think that is kind of the only way to teach. I think that's just the best way to teach the courses I teach.
And maybe you can just quickly,
yeah,
just what do you mean by flipped classroom?
So with my version of a flipped classroom is that I divide, so in the visual arts program, we have students, they have 5 classes a week in the full-time program. But each class is 4 hours. So we have a chunk of time. It's not like divided up into like 2 80-minute classes. And so we've got a chunk of time once a week. So what I do with the flipped classroom approach is they encounter the information before they get to the classroom. And then that 4 hours is divided into hands-on demos. So that's when we teach them how to use the camera. They experiment with it so that they are ready to do the assignment. I make sure that they understand the assignment. I'll go over it. I'll ask them for questions, In the classroom time, I also, that's the time I meet with them and give one-on-one critiques, or we do small group discussions. And then they have homework, so that's when they go and shoot their assignments or they research it. So the flipped classroom, I have it into basically three components. It's like the pre-class stuff, so this is the stuff they have to read or watch or think about or answer, and they sort of, they come prepared. And then the class is the time when I go over and make sure there's no, you know, that there's no questions, they understand the assignment, they do the hands-on, and then they have the homework where they have to go out and, like, apply it. They have to go shoot their durational photograph, they have to edit it, they have to do all of that. And so within that, it's like, okay, well, then with the flipped classroom, they have to do the research. It's like I structure it so that it's an efficient use of their time. So it's not like go research durational photographs, because it's also called time images or time photography. So what I do is I give them very detailed information sheets, probably more detail than they, I think, because I know one of the things that I have to reflect on and figure out is I give lots of information and I try and do it on the least amount of paper. But I think the design of lots of information is important, because they see, like, you know, three or four pages of information and they're like overwhelmed, right? And especially I'm teaching a student with autism, and they're just, right, he's like, and deadlines. So I've got students that have these differing needs, so I have to figure out a way to actually take that same information and break it down into chunks, which may be a workbook, I'm not sure. So that's kind of the one of the things I have to reflect on. So I chunk it up in terms of what's the end goal, and then have really detailed assignments that help them with their research, and then ask them those questions, reflect on it, and answer those questions in the class. So it's like a hell of a amount of work. Like, it's so much work. I probably haven't worked this hard since I first started teaching here, when you're just like getting all your stuff together. But by making the students responsible for that, I'm finding that at least this crop of students, they're very much engaged, that they come in knowing, that's not like they're blowing off the readings because they're not going to know what's happening.
Right, right. So how do you explain the AL process to the students? It's sometimes called meta-teaching, or sort of, how do you explain the why we're doing this and how it connects to the how we're doing this?
Right.
So why are you doing a long-duration film?
Right, right. Exactly. So what I do is this is where I sort of like do the lecture part, because students are very different now than they were like 10 years ago, where they would come up, you know, they would show up and they would just like, whatever you teach me is fine, because you're the authority. But now students are like, well, I don't like, they're questioning things, right? We're not this all-knowing being that they kind of, you know, like, I felt revered when I first started teaching 20 years ago, like I was this expert, right? And it's like, oh, I know some stuff, but now students are much more, they're engaged in a way, they're engaged in their learning in a different way, where they want the most bang for their buck now. It's like, and they ask those questions like, why are we learning this? And I like that, because it's like, okay, perfect. So I've had to, like, you know, basically justify, like, learn how to justify what I'm doing. And so I usually do that by just putting into context, like with this durational photography, that's when I talk to them in class, because I liked, I don't know, it's like that one-on-one, because I love that. It's like, well, here's kind of like, here's the whole course. We're talking about still photography and the decisive moment. We did an assignment on the constructed image. Now we're doing something on durational, and then we're going to be doing video. So this is kind of the trajectory of the course. And then this fits into, so this is how it fits into the course, but this is also how it fits into art practices. So when you make a durational photograph, you know, what are you doing, something same as Scott McFarland or Owen Kidd, or what's your purpose? So it's about contextualizing it. And I think soon as students realize that it's not this thing that they have to do for marks and has no connection, they're in, right? I think that's the buy-in, where they see it in terms of the trajectory of the course, as well as in the art, sort of the art world.
Okay. If you work with a community partner, does your preparation differ? Like an art gallery or someone else?
If I bring in, like if I get my art history students or my visual culture students to go to an art gallery, it's usually, you know, emails like coming down. So I don't have a lot of experience with working with outside partners.
Right.
Yeah, usually it's just kind of within the college. Okay. So, yeah, and I mean, working within the college has its own set of, I don't want to say challenges, but I mean, it's like how do you book a room? Who do you talk to if you want money, right? So, so different. So no to the community partners.
Okay, and then that's, you know, every instructor does different things. Mm-hmm. You can't do all things. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk a little bit about monitoring now, and there's a reflective piece to this. Recognize that sometimes an activity doesn't go as planned. Sometimes that's for better, and sometimes that's for worse. Mm-hmm. How do you assess your students' experience in light of, you've talked about learning outcomes, like you reverse engineer. So something doesn't go the way you'd hoped. You've set up these learning outcomes. Mm-hmm. How do you, which process on recognizing that and then like assessing it?
Right. So within my courses, it's like, did the majority get it? Because I mean, the first thing I always think of like, okay, what did I do wrong? Right. Because I always think, oh, well, if they're not learning or if it went sideways, it must be something that I did. So then it's like, okay, well, did they have enough time? Like, so then I sort of like go through my system. Okay. Did they have enough time to prepare? Were the questions readable? Were they, and I'll ask them, it's just like, so, and they're like, well, I didn't understand the question. And it's like, people will be like, yeah, I didn't either. So it's like, okay, well, so this is what I wanted. So how would I better word that? Because sometimes I'm using language that maybe is too academic, or it assumed knowledge that maybe I introduced in September, but they didn't remember in November. So, so I'll go through my stuff. And I ask the students, like, it's like, okay, so who didn't get this and why? And that's always a courageous step too, because as soon as you, because it is kind of showing students your jugular, right? It's like, okay, well, this went wrong. Some of you got it, some of you didn't. So what went, you know, what happened? Because I want to do this better. So I usually, and then I revamp. I haven't had something fall so terribly on its face that it was, you know, unsalvageable. But I think if you're just sort of honest with students, it's like, you know what, this is what I thought. And it didn't work. So, let's redo the assignment, or, I'll grade it again, or like, that's what I would do if something really went sideways. But, no, I haven't had it. Yeah. So
no. And, but sometimes like when things go sideways, like you're doing a project, like, and, but that sideways shows that real world experience, just like in the classroom, can represent the real world. The things go sideways. That is the nature of things.
Yeah.
In the real world, a project, you don't see it if you walk into an art gallery and you just assume, oh, the show opened at 7 and everything was beautiful. What you didn't see is how chaotic everything was at 5:30.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah. And I think, like, because I remember telling one of my colleagues at the college here, it's like, you know, we're talking about, you know, what happens when things go sideways. And I said, you know what, now I just own it, because it's like, like, what else have you got? Because, like, you're going to stand there and go, like, I'm the authority, and everybody's like, well, that was, like, really? That's right. There's nothing worse than sitting on a committee, like, with somebody who always thinks that they're right and they can't own a mistake, right? That they're covering up because their ego is at stake, or it's just like, you know what, it goes sideways, own it, how are you going to make it better? Because ultimately, that's what, you know, I want people to walk away with. It's like, okay, well, that fell on its face, but, you know, she gave us another chance, or we reworked it, and, right, and that's, I don't know, I think that's the way to do it.
Right, and that takes a certain kind of trust with your students, and a certain kind of courage internally.
Yeah.
To be like, I thought this would be great, I worked really hard.
Yeah.
And then it floundered.
Yeah.
It may not have flopped.
Yeah. But I thought it would go this way, and it kind of went this way, and, I mean, sometimes it goes this way, and it's just like, well, that's interesting. So why did you guys go that way? Because I thought,
Right.
There were, and it's like, well,
90 degrees askew from where you thought it would go.
Yeah, right? Right. I mean, I'm their parents' generation, so we're thinking way different. So
yes.
Yeah.
What research tools do you have if things are starting to go askew in a way that you don't like?
Research tools?
Reset. Yeah, just the idea, like you're in a class experience in applied learning,
yeah.
And you're like, oh, something's come up, and you're like, either, like, for example, things aren't engaging. You thought, yeah, this would be, like, fire, and people would, right, love it, and there's kind of a murmur of...
like, discontent.
Or just not engaged in the way.
Yeah.
How do you reset that?
Yeah. Well, usually the things that don't go as planned typically are like discussion-based things, right? Because either students are exhausted, or they didn't do the reading, or they don't want to open their mouths, or, right? So, I mean, you can't make people talk. So what I'll do is I'll, with a discussion-based aspect, I'll ask a question, you'll get the murmur, I'll make a joke about, you know, is there a pulse out there? And then I'll ask the question again. And if nothing happens, then what I'll do is I will ask a ridiculous question. I will ask something that is, like, really just out there. But the idea with whatever I ask will bring us back to whatever I'm trying to discuss. So if I'm talking about, you know, like in art history... in my cultural uses of photography, I remember, like, with the first early lectures, when you're trying to get students to engage, like, so we talk about the British middle class represented themselves in these little photographs called cartes de visite, and so so I'll be talking about it, and they're like, you know, half of them won't have done the reading, some of them don't want to talk about it. So what I did, like, last semester was, just ask a question about Facebook, because ultimately it's about self-representation. So what's something that they know that they could talk about that isn't really connected to what I'm talking about, but is? It's more like a contemporary equivalent. And then I'll kind of bring it back to, well, this is what's happening in 19th century. It's not so different from what we're doing today with, you know, right, how we're represented. So, but I usually ask that kind of that oddball question, because it kind of brings them back, right, and it redirects them, because sometimes... yeah, it's the way things are posed. So that's kind of the reset. Or if an assignment isn't going, because usually I try new assignments every semester, which is a lot of work, and I don't know why I do that. But and if it's like, okay, I thought this would take a week, and it's obviously going to take 2 weeks. So now it's like, okay, so I'll just say, you know, I thought this was going to take a week. It's going to take 2 weeks. So let's break it down. And instead of this being due today, this will be due at the end, you know.
Right.
And then break it up. So...
okay, so that actually brings us nicely into assessment and evaluation. Mm-hmm. So how do you structure your formative and summative assessments for the student?
So I give the, because most of them kind of listen and they don't listen, I usually have lots of things written down. Like I have on their assignment sheets, it's like, you know, here's the learning objectives, you know, and it's basically tied to the learning outcomes. Here is here's a general way I'm going to be assessing it, and then I, you know, see the rubric on D2L for more. So I have I usually give them all that information in many different ways, and I talk about it in class. I have examples. It's like, this is a great example of a photograph. This isn't. So because I have lots of different learners.
Right.
So let me think. What else? And I have them critique each other's work. I come in and look at it. We give them feedback so they can improve it. So there's lots of different ways that they know what the assignment is, how it's going to be evaluated. You know, troubleshooting, like with your photograph, it shouldn't have a yellow cast. And if it does, here's the, you know, it's obviously, you know, do this, reshoot, or here's how you do it in Photoshop. So there's lots of sort of in points and exit points about how to, about their work.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's take a step back now. We're looking overall at sort of like a wider lens on assessment evaluation. What evidence have you seen that applied learning activities deepen student understanding of a concept, theory, idea, or like a field?
Mm-hmm. I think because there's so many different kinds of learners, and maybe, you know, and I don't want to single out the visual arts department or students that come through our program, but I mean, some of these kids were in art because they couldn't get math, or, and I think that was like an easy way. It's like, oh, you're not good in the sciences and you seem to be drawing and you're interested in the arts, so we'll just shoo you over there. So we've got students that are come with a wide variety of different skill sets and sort of learning approaches. And so in terms of how the more hands-on and the more different ways that they have to engage with something, that one of those ways is going to sort of take, right? And each assignment, like, they're, you know, the students are different. Every class they come in, they're on their game, they're not on their game. They've done the assignment, they're kind of done, like, so you have to sort of be kind of prepared for everything. But I think when you offer or you structure your courses in a way that they have to be responsible for it, they don't kind of sit there and take it in. And it's funny how many students register for my courses and then they learn that it's a flipped classroom approach and that they've got homework, like basically have homework to do before they come to class, they're out, right? And so right away, you get those people that they can't deal with that. But if they have to read and think and answer questions and tie it to their own art practice and they get hands-on things, they walk away knowing. Because, I mean, it would be easy for them just to, you know, ultimately, we could just record all our demos. Like, here's how to use a DSLR camera and have a YouTube clip. And they sit there and they watch it for an hour. But they can't stop and ask a question, or they can't come up and say, like, look through the lens. And the way that we, like in my lens class right now, when Mike is showing them how to use a DSLR camera, he's got a great big monitor. So he's actually, it's live feed, right? So it's like, okay, if I switch this here, you can see it's a yellow cast because now this and this. So it is, it's on the spot learning and showing the whys and the how comes instead of just like, do it this way.
Right.
And as soon as they understand, oh, I didn't, you know, it's a tungsten light and I've got it set on daylight. No wonder it's like this weird cast. So the more ways you can come at teaching besides book learning and research, like that gives them it's a more holistic way to teach. And at least, and I mean, that's the way I learn, right? It's like, I need to see it. I need to write it. I need to like think about it. I need to apply it. And so when it comes to that package of learning where they're engaged and they have to be engaged and then they have to apply it and they know they have to apply it, so they better listen in the demo. Then they walk away, I think, richer students. And I know when our students go on and do BFAs at other institutions, we always get told by other instructors, it's like, we love your students because they're problem solvers. They're creative thinkers. If they don't have a tripod, they'll build one out of like three sticks and a rock. Like that's the kind of thinking that we encourage.
Right, right. So let's talk about that final transformation a little bit. One of the last element of applied learning principles is acknowledgement. Mm. So how do you celebrate this student transformation?
Oh, wow. Like individually or as a group? Anyway, I have to remember that because we teach so many students, I want them to like get through it. I'm always in the like critical mode, right? It's like, okay, well, this has a cast and you should do this and this. But I always have to like pull back and it's like, you know what? Like what do they do right? Right? Because it's always, and sometimes that's really easy to do because a student will have, you know, struggled and then they produce something that's like outstanding. Like, and it could be outstanding. It may be a B+ and not an A+, but it's outstanding because they started out at like a C, right? And so I just, you know, I get them to look at it. It's like, and tell them, like, I hope you're proud because you did this, this, and this, and this.
Right.
And so because I work with them one-on-one and I see their project through all stages, I know their struggles because I ask them, it's like, okay, what were your successes and what were the potholes? Right. And so it's not like they just show me a final product. So individually, it's like, you did awesome. Like, that was a really hard concept and you nailed it. Right. And as a group, like, I mean, we also get students to show their work. So we've got some spaces on campus that we've, we've kind of negotiated. The students have show their work. And I think that's where they get a real big sense of accomplishment. It's like, it's not like something I did in class and then like three people saw it and my teacher. It's like, now it's up in the library and students are walking by and seeing it. And there's your name. And I celebrate it, like one-on-one. And because we do midterm interviews and final interviews, I've got that one-on-one time with them for sure if I don't see them in class. So that's how I kind of do it.
Okay. Have you, as we've gone through this conversation, is there anything else you want to add or any ideas that have kind of percolated that you, any suggestions you have for people who are interested in applied learning or just anything that's kind of front of mind?
I think it's an exciting way to teach. And I think it's an exciting way to learn. And I structure things the way that I would like to be taught, which is lots of information, lots of different ways of coming at it. And most of the times it will be fine. How can it not be fine? It's a win-win. So if it's successful, yay for you. You did it. Students got something out of it. And if something goes sideways or not as planned, that's a learning opportunity too. So, you have to be kind of fearless, which is easy to say after you've been teaching for a long time. But I wouldn't have been fearless in the first, 5 years teaching here, because it's like, well, what will the dean say? But we've also had deans where it's like, go for it, try it, what's the worst that can happen? So the culture at the college is such, within arts and science at least, that it's like, try it.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for your ideas and thoughts, and we'll end it there.